Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Anyway, it is a completely irrelevant story, really, which is sometimes exactly what we need, because we live in a time where so many of our stories are actually very relevant and too irrelevant. Let's talk about what is going on with the hostage deal and the influence that President Trump might have had in terms of his meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Shaul Ben-Ephraim, host of the History of the Land of Israel podcast, Israel Explained YouTube channel. First of all, Mazal Tov, congratulations, Shaul just got engaged. I saw it on Twitter, so it has to be true.
It is true, not fake news. Yes, thank you so much.
Absolutely awesome. So that is, have you been going out for long?
Yeah, a year and a few months.
Okay, my you know, advice from a long married man, just know how long you've been going out for. Even if you don't, find out from her friends how long you've been going out for, and then you know. Because there's certain sensitivities, no matter what. Anyway, great news, really wonderful to hear. Let's talk about what is happening. Of course, the way in which this hostage release story has played out, absolutely horrific on the one hand, yet we are still seeing, thank God, some of the hostages coming home to their families. What is the influence that Trump has had on this process?
Well, you know, it's hard to know what would have happened without Trump. But the common wisdom is, and most people believe, that without Trump, this wouldn't have happened, that it was looking like it was about to collapse again, and the fear that Netanyahu had of starting the Trump administration on the wrong foot is what actually got this happening. And on a couple of occasions when there was a serious crisis, I wouldn't call the crisis we had today a very serious one, but on a couple of occasions we had a more serious crisis, like the Shiri Bibas body, for example, a couple of others, Trump was one of the main things that kept it going.
Which is so interesting.
There seems to be a big disconnect between what Trump is saying publicly and what they're doing behind the scenes. A lot of that is because behind the scenes, Trump isn't really running things. It's more Witkoff and Rubio that seem to be running things. And their main interest has been to keep things ticking and to keep the deal going. And Trump has been happy to let them do that. He has, when needed, supported that. So, yeah, I think without him, this wouldn't be happening. And I think, you know, there's so much criticism of this deal from people that I think we need to remember it's actually been a great success in the most basic terms of getting all the hostages that were supposed to come out, all the bodies out. There have been a lot of delays, a lot of games, a lot of cruelty and sadism. So it's very easy to lose sight of the big picture.
Right. But because, I happen to think in the bigger picture, the cruelty and the sadism is actually, strangely enough, positive, in that it leaves very, very little doubt for those that were finding ways to defend Hamas. To look at that and not see their cruelty is virtually impossible. So the result was the result, which is the hostages, the number of hostages that were meant to be released in the deal are coming home, and but the cruelty along the way is evil, but actually doesn't impact on the outcome. What it does impact is on how Hamas is viewed in the world.
You're right. I mean, to the extent that there is a constituency out there that still cares about facts and thought that Hamas was fine until now, then maybe just convince. I'm not sure how big that constituency is. You know, I think that to actually think that Hamas is a good actor at this point or neutral, you have to really be a troubled person or get your news from a very specific silo, where this wouldn't penetrate. But I'm sure it did no favors to their image.
Right.
I would agree on that.
Can I ask you, as somebody who's been involved formally with the intelligence, what bothered me over this last week was that Hamas, the ceremony was very much designed to evoke all sorts of emotions within Israel and the Israel supporting community. It was hideous. The fact that the coffins were, they couldn't open them, they were given the wrong keys, and then they knew that sometime in the middle of the night it would have been figured out that in fact it wasn't Shiri Bibas's body, but somebody else's body that they had placed in the coffin. That was again going to raise the temperature in Israel. A few hours later, it was designed, a terror attack was planned, a significant terror attack for the early hours of, or the rush hour of Friday morning in Israel, where people's emotions already would have been at breaking point. To me, all of that suggests that this was almost designed to be this final epic standoff between, or showdown between Israel and Hamas, signifying, of course, that Hamas is not going anywhere. They are going down in flames of, in inverted commas, glory. It didn't work out that way. But to me, it looks like it was designed to. What do you think?
I beg to differ. I think that what Hamas was doing, well, first, okay, there's a couple of things. First of all, we're giving a little bit too much credit to the idea that Hamas knows exactly what it's doing in terms of the fact it doesn't really control Gaza. A lot of people in Israeli intelligence think that the Shiri Bibas thing with the body was a mistake. I couldn't tell you, but a lot of people think that was a mistake. And then there's also the issue with those attacks. There are people who think that that was the initiative of a specific cell of Hamas in Tul Karim and not of Hamas Gaza. So there's that. But even if we think that it was coming from some kind of centralized Hamas decision-making, which is totally possible, I would interpret it differently. Mm-hmm. I think Hamas is very weak. One thing that Israeli negotiators are noticing is that Hamas is caving on demands a lot more than it usually does.
Right.
Because it doesn't have a centralized leadership. And therefore, it's trying to make up for its weakness with all sorts of pyrotechnics from their perspective, like showing that they can still blow up buses, like messing with the psychology of Israeli families, because they don't actually have the command and control combat capabilities, missile capabilities that they used to, and they're trying to make up for it in other ways. And we're seeing real weakness from them at the negotiation table. That's what I'm hearing from everyone.
Right, right. We do need to leave it there, but that is very interesting, and I'm fascinated to hear your take on it. Thank you, as always, Shaul Ben-Ephraim, host of the History of the Land of Israel podcast, Israel Explained YouTube channel.